on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Our guest this time, Ruben Ramirez of Reedley, California. He is 88 years old, and he served with the Blue Devils of the 88th Infantry Division, wounded three times as that division fought through Italy. When we left off, he'd been told by his lieutenant that all the aid men were busy and that Ruben would have to go carry a wounded soldier to safety. Tell us what happened next.
So I got him and calmed him down and got him in a fireman's carry and started down and away from the crest of the hill so that the enemy won't see me until I got into an open field. And then we were running across the open field when I felt a pain in my hand and in my thigh. And I fell down and I told the guy, I'm dropping the packs here, because we were all loaded down with packs. So it says, so, and then we'll make it the rest of the way. But in that time, there was sniper fire coming at us. So he said, we got to get up and get out of here. So we finally got him into the aid station, and they took care of him right away. And then they asked me if I wanted some dry socks to take back to the guys. I said, yeah. I said, yeah, because my shoes are all wet and full of water. And again, I took off my boot, and the blood had run down my leg. And I said, okay, let's take a look at you. So the aid man looked at me and said, no, you're not going back out. I lost my pack. I lost my souvenir pistols. I lost everything that I had in the pack. A personal being, you know, things.
You had left that in the field just trying to make it there, right?
Yeah, so somebody else picked them up and got the pistols, and I hope they shared whatever it was what they wanted. Because, you know, it's all personal stuff that you pick up along the way and you keep for little souvenirs. But I had taken a .32 caliber Walther off of a German officer. Earlier, when we were walking up the road and there was a farmhouse, the lieutenant tells me, take your team, go and check out that farmhouse. Wait, they're walking in the road. So when we get over there, we start hollering if they're in there to come out in English, you know, and in German, comes to say here, you know, try to make some kind of communication. So two soldiers came out with their hands up, and we took them aside, and then we start saying, anybody else in there? And then this officer walks out with his hands up, and two other soldiers come out with him. So there was five people in there, and there was only three of us. But when he approached me, I told him, you know, in front of me, we started searching down. I got the pistol off of him, and I lost that. That was a personal thought of having it.
The thing that strikes me, and I know you're not patting yourself on the back, you're just telling me what happened, but so often we hear these kind of stories, and when you're in that situation, you do what you hope the other guy would do for you. But I'm struck by a verse in the Bible. It says, greater love has no man than this, that he lay down his life for his friend. And you almost lost your life trying to save someone else's.
Well, it happens like that, but you don't give that a thought, though. You do what you have to do, especially to somebody wounded like that, because he was really hurting and he was bleeding good. And I just had to get him over there. There was no other thought of doing nothing else but getting him there.
And for those of us who haven't been in a war, haven't been in a combat situation, we can't understand it the way you do. But I'm curious, did that anger you? Because obviously you're upset that you got shot. But when you thought about the fact that you're not a threat at this point, you're just trying to carry a wounded soldier to an aid station and someone shot you in that process, did that anger you? Did that seem out of line, even in a war situation?
No, I didn't give it a thought to it. I'm a soldier. I'm an enemy. I can become his victim. If he can shoot good, he's going to get us. If not, well, my thought was just getting him, my friend, to the aid station. And no thought of the consequences in between. Because you do what you have to do. Like I say, your stamina is going. Your, what do you call it? Adrenaline. Your thoughts are just to accomplish one thing, and that was to get him from point A to point B. Consequences in between is something else that are not predictable.
So you've told us about two times being hit by shrapnel, and neither time did you really realize what had happened to you. What about the third? What were the circumstances there?
Oh, it was a shrapnel from a mortar. We were online on advancing, but we stopped at a farmhouse. Some of the guys went into the farmhouse. Some of the guys went to the barn to get some rest, to cook up things, clean up, or just relax or something. And I told my sergeant, well, I'm going to go over to the house to see some of the guys. So I was walking across the barnyard when three mortar shells came in there. And I was in the middle of it, so all I did was take off. And I just run to the house and got in there. And then I told the guy again, you better check me out because I feel some blood running down my leg. He looked and said, well, I can't tell if there's any metal in there or not, but you're bleeding pretty good. You're going back to the hospital for x-rays to make sure. Patched me up, put me in the ambulance back to the hospital, took x-rays, kept me for a couple of days, sent me back because they didn't find no metal in there. You know, they just sewed it up and sent me back in a few days. I got a few days rest out of it anyway.
It makes me wonder what all that did to your outlook, because here you are, your brother's been killed in this war. You've been wounded 3 times. Moving on from there, were you scared that the next time was going to be worse, or did you feel like, you know what, nothing's going to happen to me if I can take care of all of this?
If you say that you're not scared, you're crazy, because you have to be scared no matter what. You anticipate, if it's going to be combat, you know, you start the fighting, you have to anticipate, is one going to hit me now or later, or what's going to happen? But to say that you're not scared, it's just a poor saying that you're, no one realizes what you're in. I say I was scared, and everybody tells you that they weren't scared in combat. I'm not going to say they were liars, but...
You know, this show, I always hear the firsthand account of a particular veteran, but sometimes it's helpful to understand the big picture, too. And in the case of your division, the 88th Infantry Division, those Blue Devils, you guys have a pretty impressive history in Italy, especially during World War II. Over the years, as you've gone to reunions and talked to other guys from your division and you've read about it, what do you appreciate most about what you, in conjunction with all these other guys, were able to accomplish?
Well, we did fight one of the tougher divisions of the German Army, and they gave us a lot of credit for being such good fighters as far as that goes, overall for the division.
And that's where your nickname came from, right?
Right. The ferocity of the fighting that they first went into surprised Axis Sally, who was a propaganda broadcaster. Those Blue Devils with those patches were too ferocious to fight, you know, that they were... They hated to come against the division.
Those blue clover leaf patches on your shoulders is what she was referring to. And obviously, if the division adopted that as the new nickname, I guess you guys took some pride in that description, huh?
Everybody was proud to be able to, here comes the Blue Devil. Yeah, I got a jacket with it says that and everything. And I was at this AMVET convention this past month, and I wore it over there. And they looked at it and said, what's that Blue Devil do you have there? And then I turned my back and I have them read the back because it says 88. Division is association, and it has the patch. It says that's what it represents.
And from what I've heard from other veterans from that division over the years is that it was pretty nonstop action, right? I mean, you guys saw a lot of days of combat. Is that right?
Yeah, it was. You know, we fought 3 different combat zones. The first one was Romarno, and then we fought the Po Valley, and then we fought the Apennines battle. So that's 3 different combat zones. And they were like all lasted maybe 2, 3, 4 months in between, on and off, on and off. You went in reserve to rest and take care of it, and then you go back on the line and somebody else would come off the line to rest up.
Well, I want to get to the Apennines and some of the things I've heard about that, but when you talk about those 3 times you were wounded and the time that took you off the front lines, have you ever thought about that, that maybe... As painful as it was and as scary as it was, you were actually fortunate to be wounded when you were? Did it take you away from stuff that could have been worse?
When I got back, a lot of the guys were gone. They were either killed or wounded. And you go back to your squad, they're all new faces there. And you have to get familiarize yourself with them and to know them and see what they are and how they think and everything. So you go back, your whole squad might be gone. When you're just assigned to a squad. Like one time that I came back to the company, I was supposed to report to my company, the E company. Instead, the guy came and said, you're going to G company. I said, no, I don't want to go to G company. They need replacements, they need them now. We can't stand and argue that you're not going to go because that's where you're going. So they picked 5 guys that were returning to send them to G company. So they go over there, report in and everything else. And next day, we're new people in their company. We don't know them. They don't know us. They put us on a patrol to go out on a patrol. Okay. The lieutenant points to me and says, you're Lee Scout. Okay, fine. Get me a Tommy gun, because if I were Lee Scout in my company, they'd give me a Tommy gun. He said, well, we don't have Tommy guns for you. You have to use your rifle. So I said, I can't be a scout with a rifle. So we discussed it back and forth. I won't say argue, we discussed it back and forth. And I seen a corporal with a Tommy gun. And I said, he's got a Tommy gun. He's not using it. I can carry it out there and bring it. If I make lucky, I'll bring it back to him. So he goes and gets the Tommy gun. He gives it to me and says, you're a lead scout now. I said, okay. So we take off and over through the hills and the road. We go through a town. And there's a bluff on this side. Then there's a road. And then there's a like a valley. And as I come out of the town and down the road, make a curve, there's a hut on the side of the road over here, and I see Germans going into it. So I flop at the ditch right there at the bottom, next to the bluff that's there, the little ditch, and sign for tell the guys to stop back there and everything. Lieutenant comes up, and I tell him what I saw, and he says, well, hold attention here. Don't fire or anything. Just watch. And then he said, I'm going to take part of the guys that run through the valley and go around it before we do anything. If you hear firing, then you start firing. So as they're going advancing down there, a German gun is up on a hillside, already sighted at him, and they started firing at them. I waited to see if he was going to holler or anything, but he didn't. And I said, well, if they're firing down there, it says there's Germans in the hills. So I started backing up and telling the guys to run back. So we go running back the road into town, and we're going down the road, and this machine gun starts firing right down the center of the road. If he were to move it 1 inch to either side, he could have got everyone, but it went right down the middle of the road. Then we got to a wall. We flop in behind the wall, and we waited. It stopped firing. We make a dash across the road, and we got it up behind the wall, and the lieutenant turns around and says, you go back and check that guy that's laying over there. I said, what guy? I thought I was the last one. He said, well, there's a man down over there by the wall. So go and check to see if he's wounded or what's his condition. So he gives me about 5 little vials of morphine in case he's wounded. So I dash across the road. Nobody fired. I checked him out. He was dead. So I got ready and then dashed back across the road again to East Zaire. Then we went to town and set up a defense position for a counterattack. In case, but we waited about an hour and they didn't do anything, so we started backing out. It was getting dusk, so we returned to our lines. But of course, you're a new man in a company like that. That's what happened. You have to be the first one to be exposed. But 2 days later, I get back to my own company.
That must have been a sigh of relief just for the comfort level you had with them, huh?
Yeah, because I got to see my friends there, no? Because they got more new replacements come in, so they were assigned over there, and we got them sent back to our company. Which was a relief for us. We got to rest for a couple of weeks before we were in reserve.
Tell me about the Apennines campaign. What was the fighting like? What were the conditions like? Because I've heard some pretty awful stories about the weather conditions, the terrain, the enemy. How did you experience that?
Once you got out of the Po Valley and into the mountains, you're fighting rain, you're in fog, you're in total black darkness. You don't know where they're at. They know where you're at. They're up higher and they can see where we're progressing along the roads. Because you have to stick to the roads, and there are very few places that you can get away from track climbing a mountain. But the worst experience was being up in the mountains and you're on guard duty at midnight, pitch black. You can't see your hand in front of your eyes, like in front of your face. And it's foggy. You hear the water dripping off of the leaves, making noises. Your senses are become acute to hear what kind of noise are you hearing. You can't see anything, but you hear a particular dripping on this side or rustling or on that side. I mean, I was scared of the dark. I have to sleep with a nightlight. I have to sleep with light.
Today you do because of an experience 70 years ago.
I can't sleep without it. If I fall asleep when it's dark, when I wake up, I get a panic attack. That's the worst part is, I make sure the lights are on.
That's something you've just had to live with ever since the war?
Yeah. I sleep with the lights on outside. I sleep with the night lights inside. It's something you can't say. Turn it off. You can't turn it off.
Oh, I know that is not easy to talk about, but thank you so much for telling us about that. It's hard for us to grasp what veterans have dealt with. In many cases, like yours, nearly 70 years living like that. Thank you for making it all real for us. Ruben Ramirez of Reedley, California is our guest. The rest of his story when Hometown Heroes continues after this.
The average age of the veterans on this program is pretty close to 90, so I've seen firsthand over the years the challenges of aging, and I've realized that everybody approaches them a little differently. For some, a friendly senior living community is the ideal option, but for many of us, there's no place like home. I don't have any ruby slippers for you, but I do have an idea. Call Jason Selzler at 317 Construction, recognized by the National Association of Home Builders as a certified age-in-place specialist. Instead of giving up the comforts of home, why not let 317 Construction make your home more comfortable by making it more accessible? Jason and his crew can widen doorways, install ramps for wheelchairs or scooters, reconfigure your counters for better access, modify your shower for safety, secure grab bars wherever you need them, whatever it takes to allow you and your family to keep making your memories in the place that holds so many of them, your home sweet home. Call 905-8490. That's 559-905-8490. If you are a World War II veteran and you have not been to the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., Honor Flight wants to take you there, free of charge. The sooner you submit an application, the sooner Honor Flight can get you to your memorial. In Kern County or the Central Coast, call Lily Marsh at 661-544-VETS. That's 661-544-VETS. Or go to honorflightkerncounty.org. For Fresno, Madera, Merced, Mariposa, Kings, or Tulare counties, check out CV Honor Flight, CV as in Central Valley, CVHonorFlight.org, or call Al Perry at 559-970-9853. That's 559-970-9853. Maybe you're the son or daughter of a veteran and you'd like to go along as a guardian. There are applications for that too, and there are other ways you can help. Donations to Honor Flight are tax deductible. We all owe our freedom and liberty to the men and women who put their lives on the line for it. Let's all come together now behind Honor Flight and give our veterans one more tour with honor.